ॐ तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरि ओम् ओम् सदाशिवसमारम्भाम् व्यासशङ्करमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्ताम् वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् श्रुतिस्मृतिपुराणानाम् आलयम् करुणालयम् नमामि भगवत्पादशङ्करं लोकशङ्करं शङ्करं शङ्कराचार्यं केशवं बादरायणं सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वन्दे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः ॐ हरिः ॐ तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ ॐ भद्रं कर्णे विश्रुणुयामदेवाः भद्रं पश्येमाक्षभर्यजत्राः स्थिरैरङ्गैस्तुष्टुभागंसस्तनुभिः व्यशेमदेवहितै यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति नः पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्तार्क्ष्यो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्दधातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ अथाश्वलायनो भगवन्तं परमेष्ठिनम् उपसमेत्योवाच अधीहि भगवन् ब्रह्म विद्यां वरिष्ठां सदा सद्भिः सेव्यमानां निगूढां यथाचिरात् सर्वपापं व्यपोह्य परात्परम् पुरुषं याति विद्वान् तस्मै सहोवाच पितामहश्च श्रद्धा भक्ति ध्यानयोगादवैः न कर्मणा न प्रजया धनेन त्यागे नैके अमृतत्वमानशुः परेण नाकं निहितं गुहायां विभ्राजते यद्यतयो विशन्ति वेदान्तविज्ञान सुनिश्चितार्थाः सन्न्यासयोगाद् यतयः शुद्धसत्त्वाः ते ब्रह्मलोकेषु परान्तकाले परामृता परिमुच्यन्ति सर्वे वी हैव कवर्ड दिस फोर वर्स फोर मंत्रास सो ऋषि अश्वलायनः अप्रोचेस लॉर्ड ब्रह्मा आस्किंग फॉर ब्रह्म विद्या आस्किंग फॉर नॉलेज ऑफ द रियलिटी द वेरी फैक्ट Ashwalayanaha did not ask for mokshaha, he asked for knowledge. That itself makes very clear that he was very clear, knowledge of Brahman, knowledge of the reality is the only means for accomplishing moksha. And that itself is, it proves that knowledge and moksha are identical, they are not two different things. Attainment of knowledge is attainment of discovery of moksha. Discovery of moksha is attainment of moksha. And then the teacher, Lord Brahma himself being the teacher, and he said the two means of attaining knowledge, one is sakshat sadhanam, which is the jnana yoga, that is shravana manana nididhyasanam alone, the study of the Vedanta Shastram in proper order in terms of shravanam mananam and nididhyasanam alone form the direct means of knowledge. But that shravanam and mananam nididhyasanam, as we have already seen how what it is, will be effective, fruitful only if it is pursued along with the discipline of vairagyam. Vairagyam, and here the shravanam, mananam and nididhyasanam are mentioned by other words, shraddha, bhakti, dhyana yoga. Similarly, the word vairagyam also is mentioned by another word, tyagaha. So we have seen this. And thereby, in four verses, actually, briefly, the order of the teaching is presented. Which means end must be very clear. End being moksha must be very, very clear. Which means having purushartha nischayaha. And that is once the purushartha nischayaha is there, and knowledge being the only means of moksha also becomes very clear. And knowledge of what? It is knowledge of Brahma, knowledge of absolute reality being the only means also is made very clear. And that knowledge of Brahman also is nothing but knowledge of one's own swarupam, which is atmajnanam, self-knowledge, being the means of moksha is made very clear. And for that jnanam, whether it be called atmajnanam or brahmajnanam, this knowledge of the reality as one's own self, which is the means of moksha, is possible only through shravanam, mananam and nididhyasanam. And that shravanam and nididhyasanam will be possible only if you are mentally prepared for that jnanam. And which we say that qualification required for jnanam is sattva shuddhihi. The mental purity with the focused attention or chitta antakarna shuddhihi or antakarna naischalyam vina, without which this knowledge is not possible. And for that antakarna shuddhihi and antakarna naischalyam, mental purity and mental steadiness, without which shravanam, mananam, nididhyasanam will be impossible or it will not be effective. Now for which one has to choicelessly live a life of karma yoga. Even though Upanishad does not mention it, and we have to incorporate it here. So living a life of karma yoga is the means, sadhanam, for qualification required for jnanam. That is in terms of mental purity and mental steadiness. And only if you are qualified, then direct means of knowledge is, shravanam mana nididhyasanam. So this order is very well presented here, we have seen. Now, from this fifth mantra, we are going to see now fifth mantra. The fifth, sixth and seventh, now the author is going to introduce the meditation. The topic of meditation. Here, before we enter into these verses, let us understand this. In general, meditation means always meditation starts with how? Ekarupa dhyanam. Then from Ekarupa dhyanam means focusing one's attention on a given form, which is an object of meditation, which represents Bhagavan the whole. That one form on which you focus attention is actually a symbol for Bhagavan the whole. We never in Shastram, if you want to use the word dhyanam, then definitely it must be, object of meditation must be only Bhagavan. Doesn't matter whether you are focusing your attention on mic or that candlelight or any Omkara or some form, any form you can focus attention on, no problem. But that form must be understood to be the symbol of Bhagavan. Only then it is meditation. Otherwise you can't call it dhyanam. What am I meditating on must be, the object of meditation must be Bhagavan only. Only then you can call it dhyanam. Only then you can call it upasanam. Only then you can call it meditation. Otherwise it is not. I simply focus my attention on a given object, but I don't really relate to the object as representative or symbol of Bhagavan, means still you are doing the same thing. You can't call it meditation. It's not dhyanam. Therefore, here we start with Ekarupa Dhyanam. Ekarupa Dhyanam means meditation on focusing your attention on a given object for a length of time, given a particular form, and which in fact stands for Bhagavan the whole. And there the meditator is different. The object of meditation is different from the meditator. Therefore, we say the meditator meditated difference is there. This dhyanam can help one have the focused attention. And that form which you meditate on is actually Ishta Devata, your own Ishta Devata. It can be Devi, it can be Rama, it can be Krishna, it can be any form you like. Any given form which you like. You like to invoke Bhagavan in whichever form, that one form. Even though Shankar meditates on Rama, whether I meditate on Krishna or you meditate on Jesus, doesn't matter. The forms may be different. Through all the forms, what is related to is Bhagavan the whole. But this dhyanam, this is also upasanam, this is dhyanam, is also, you can say, this meditation, what can it do? Will it lead you to jnanam? Will it lead you to moksha? No. Such meditation, is useful, very much needed. It's only to calm the restless, agitated mind. It will only make the mind steady and focused. You need it. Of course, it will help you to free yourself from stress also. But what can it do in terms of moksha, in terms of knowledge? What can it contribute? It can only help you to have focused attention. So, this is Ekarupa Dhyanam. And from there, then we move on to Anekarupa Dhyanam. Anekarupa Dhyanam means not that you are going to focus attention on many forms. In fact, Vishwarupa Dhyanam. I can say, Anekarupa Dhyanam, I can use another word, Vishwarupa Dhyanam. Vishwarupa Dhyanam means what? You see, instead of focus attention on a given form, which represents Bhagavan, you see the whole cosmos as Bhagavan. Seeing, visualizing the whole universe as Bhagavan, in Vishu Sahasranama, we have this. Bhupadau yasya nabhir viyada suranilas chandra suryau chanetre karnavasa shiro dyaur mukham apidahano yasya vasteyam abdhihi antastam yasya hridayam suranara khaga gobhogi gandharva daityaihi chitram ram ram yate tam tribhuvana pusham vishnumi isham namami. When you say, that was only described, I don't want to go into the meaning. It describes the whole cosmos you see as Bhagavan, Virat Purusha. So, there also Vishwarupa Dhyanam, not one particular form you see as Bhagavan, the whole Jagat is Ishvara. Vishwarupa Dhyanam. But even that will not help you attain jnanam or moksha. That will widen your vision. There's some understanding is there, that there ahankara resolve, because you resolve yourself in the whole. It is also helpful. But from this Vishwarupa Dhyanam, you move on to Arupa Dhyanam, meditation on formless reality. Arupa. Eka Rupat Vishwarupam, Vishwarupat Arupam. You move from there. So this Arupa Dhyanam means meditation on the formless reality, is actually, even though it's a mental activity, is meditation, but you call it contemplation or nididhyasanam. You know, nididhyasanam or contemplation, we use all these terms for what is arupa dhyanam. Arupa means formless. Rupam, sarupa with form, arupa without form. Okay? So here, the arupa dhyanam is, in this arupa dhyanam or contemplation or nididhyasanam, in this, there is no meditated difference. Object of meditation is the very swarupam of the meditator. Dhyatuhu swarupameva dhyeya vishayaha. Dhyatuhu swarupameva dhyeya vishayaha means the meditator's nature, the truth of the very meditator, the swarupam of the meditator is the object of meditation. Therefore, there is no subject-object division. There is no meditator-meditated division. And for this arupa dhyanam, or meditation on, or contemplation upon the swarupam of one's own swarupam, swarupam of the meditator, you must have done shravanam mananam. So arupa dhyanam is impossible without having gone through systematically shravanam mananam. Suppose somebody comes and tells, no, I don't study all Upanishads and Gita and all those things, you know, but still I contemplate. People come and say contemplate, they take that word very easily. Contemplate, we contemplate. Or meditate. You can meditate. It must be ekarupam or anekarupam. But definitely it is not arupam. It can be arupam. It is possible for one to meditate on this formless reality which is not an object at all. The object of meditation in nididhyasanam, in arupa dhyanam, is not at all an object. Then what is it? It is the very swarupam of the meditator. Swarup, truth of the very I. And which you must have understood very clearly, doubtlessly, through shravanam and mananam. Is it clear? This is the actual contemplation. We have seen different contexts. The sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita also, we can see those things. But here, let us see how Kaivalya Upanishad presents this. I'll give you time afterwards. If you have any doubts, you can ask. Okay? Let us see the fifth mantra now. Vivikta deshe cha sukhasanastaha shuchi samagriva shirashariraha antyashramastha sakalendriyani Nirudhya Bhaktya Swagurum Pranamya. So here, first in this fifth verse, the pre-preparation for meditation is presented. when you sit for meditation, what all the things you have to think of? When you decided to meditate, you have to think of these four aspects. Sthitihi, position of four factors. First, deshaha, deshasthitihi, the place where you sit for meditation, how it should be. No, deshaha. Then, asanam, asanasthitihi, where you should sit in, no, the place of meditation and the seat of meditation. Then, mind. Then, body. Isn't it? Then, deha sthitihi or sharira sthitihi. How should one keep one's body when you sit for meditation? Then also, manaha. How the mind should be. And how the sense organs should be. And how the intellect should be. So, you have to think of all how the meditation will be effective only if you take care of the position of all of them. Place of meditation, seat of meditation, and then the position of the body, the condition of the mind, the condition of sense organs, condition of intellect, all these things you should think of, how they should be. That is said very well here. Therefore, so generally we say in Bhagavad Gita, which is said, you know, the place must be clean place. Clean means, what do you mean by clean? Nowadays, suppose, clean means just keeping everything clean. No, it must be the place of inspiration for meditation. It must be quiet. It must be relatively secluded. You can't have a separate jungle for you. So, it must be a relatively secluded place. You can't go and sit and meditate in a place where people are watching television. Now, you can't complain afterwards, and children are playing. They will be playing, they must be watching. You have to find a place relatively secluded in the house. Vivikta deshe. It must be a secluded, quiet, clean place where when you sit also, you are able to focus your attention. The atmosphere must be such that you should not be disturbed. So, this is Vivikta Deshaha. Vivikta means relatively secluded place. Vivikta Deshe. Then, Asana Sthitihi. How should the asanam be? The seat of meditation be? Now, sometimes I see in some houses near the kitchen, you have just high chairs. You can't go, you should not go and sit in such high chairs. For pizza, it's okay. Or not for meditation. That it should not be nati chutam, nati nicham, isn't it? It can be too high or too low. It can be, this is a good place actually. This is a good condition of this the place of meditation. It's very good. And then the seat must, it should not be too, not soft, where the cushion sofas, you just go and hide inside. No, not too soft. It should not be too hard also. Therefore, it say it must be soft enough where you sit. Because it doesn't cause any discomfort that you are not disturbed. So, sukha asanastaha. When you sit for, sukha asana means you have your own concept of sukham. Not you form, okay? Not the nice form you can't think of. So, it must be soft. And adequately soft. It should not be too hard that you don't feel the pain, so you don't be disturbed. So, sukhasanam. So, sukhasanastaha means, you know, placing oneself in a comfortable seat. And also, the position also, some people think you have to sit like this, or you have to sit in padmasanam, or, you know, all these wrong ideas they have. You sit in a position, in a way, the position must be such that you feel comfortable. If you like the chair, go for a chair also. You can't sit down sometimes. Sukhasana means the seating must be comfortable for you. The sukhasana staha means the person, the meditator, the one who must be in a comfortable seat. The sukhasana staha. Then how must he be? Shuchihi. Shuchihi means one must be physically clean, mentally also clean. Antara shuddhi, bahya shuddhi. ideally meditation before shower. People say all these things. No, they always want some excuses. Always shuchihi. Because when you wake up from sleep, because the sleep is like, once you fall asleep, the body is as good as dead. It is not dead. That is why when you go for the attend condolence, you come back, you have shower, then only you enter into the house. And here also, what do you do? This body is, in sleep, body is like dead body. So when you wake up from there, it is must that we should sleep, you should have shower. Once you go to bed, you should have shower. And that is India, okay? Anyway, so here, shuchihi means one must be physically clean and mentally also pure. So how the mind must, we'll see that. Shuchihi, clean, wearing clean clothes and, as a clean body. When you sit also, you can't sit like this and all. At least see, keep your body and trunk, and neck in one straight line. The same words for Bhagavad Gita, Krishna used in Bhagavad Gita. Samam kaya shiro grivam dharayanna chalam sthiraha. Samam kaya shiro griva. Griva means neck. You keep the neck, body and head in one straight line. Sit in a comfortable seat. Very simple. This is a pre-preparation. Then, so here also he uses same words. Now you can understand, don't think Bhagavad Gita words are used in Upanishad. Upanishadic words are used in Bhagavad Gita. That you remember. Why? Bhagavad Gita is a smriti. Whatever is you said in Bhagavad Gita does not contradict the Upanishadic teaching. That is why Bhagavad Gita also is revered as Moksha Shastra. Isn't it? We saw already in that verse. But so the same words are used there means Bhagavad Gita has borrowed the words from Upanishads. You can make out here now. So Sama Griva Shiras Shariraha. Griva means neck and Shiraha head, Shariram body. So the trunk of the body, the trunk, the neck and the head should remain in one straight line. I mean that you don't really bend or like lying down and all those things. That is why samaha. So keeping one's body, neck and trunk in the head in one straight line. This is the position of the body. You have seen now the place of meditation, how it should be, how the seating must be, and how one must be physically clean, and how it should be, the position must be, we have seen, position of the body. Then, how should one's sense organs must be, it is not, I'm incorporating here, how should one's sense organs be when you sit for meditation? Sense organs must have been withdrawn from all the objects of perception. Which means completely the eyes must be taken away from the objects of sight. The hearing power is not, is not with anymore with the object sounds. The power of smelling is not involved in anymore object of smelling. The power of, you can't have chewing gum in your mouth and sit for meditation. No, that means the power of taste also is not with anymore the object of taste, any taste. Which means even the sense organs are withdrawn from their corresponding objects. Which means the attention is not paid to attention of the mind. It is not paid to any of the sense objects. Sense organs become withdrawn. Now, how to withdraw your senses from their objects? Not paying mental attention to the sense objects is keeping one's sense organs withdrawn. Only then you are ready for meditation. Why? Your attention, total attention has to be focused on, paid to this object of meditation. Therefore, sense organs are withdrawn. Then, next, we'll see here. How should the mind be? How should the mind be? Mind should be, you know, sattvic mind. A sattvic mind means what? Not rajasic. The mind should not be in rajasic or tamasic state of mind. It must be sattvic. It should enjoy the sattvic state of mind. A sattvic mind. What do you mean by that? Sattvic mind means what? Rajasic means you are inclined for, you know, very big activities. Tamasic means you will be sleepy. You will fall asleep. No, a rajasic mind will be restless. You can't focus. That is not that's not good for meditation. Tamasic mind means you will be dull and sleepy. You will fall asleep and sit for meditation. It must be sattvic. Sattvic means you alertly vigilant but quiet. Alertly quiet and vigilant mind. In fact, it is said here, no, that is said differently, a sannyasi's mind. When all of you should have the sannyasi's mind when you sit for meditation. That is why antyashramastaha, antyaha ashramaha, the final ashrama is what? Sannyas ashrama. So, when you are, every meditator should become sannyasi. When you sit for meditation, even if you are a grihastha, whether you are a brahmachari, whether you are a vanaprasthi, in meditation you are like a sannyasi. So, antyashramastaha. What does it mean here? When you sit for meditation, at least you have no connection with anything in the world. A sannyasi should not have any time, but everybody else, at least during meditation. There are only three things that a sannyasi can connect himself to, associate with. What relationship should a sannyasi have? Only three things sannyasi can relate to. The sannyasi's association must be only with three things. What are they? I mean, mind I was talking about. Now, physically, I'm with all of you. The mind should be with what? All the time. Apart from sleeping time. Okay, even in sleep, that must be going on in the mind, in subconscious. Shastram, Guruhu, Bhagavan. Nothing else. There, I'm not saying you hate your wife and husband and children and relatives and other dogs and puppies and all of them. I'm not saying you don't need to hate anybody. When you sit for meditation, you take from your mind everything else. That is why the lifestyle we lead should be such. It will make mind. If mind has to become meditative mind, the mind should, you should enjoy contemplative, meditative disposition of the mind. The whole lifestyle should be lived in such a way that you always see, do your duties, be with the family, be with friends and be with things, okay. But even then, you should always learn to be by yourself also. Emotionally I'm talking about, not physically. Emotionally. You're emotionally, you will learn to be, you know, but we should not really create more and more of emotional entanglements with people. Is it not right? It is not for the mature way of life. You be with people, have concern and do the needful, that's a different thing. But emotionally getting entangled means your mind will never be qualified for meditation. It will make the life rotten life. Be very careful. That is why how not to get entangled with the things in the world. How to develop that meditative disposition of the mind. That is why the more you are with the Shastram, the more you can be with Bhagavan, the more you are with the Guruhu, the more you are with the Shastram. Again, Guru, I don't mistake it. Guru means only, I mean Shastram. The more you are with the Shastram, the more you are with Bhagavan. The more you are with Bhagavan, the more you are with yourself. Understand? How to be by myself. How to be with myself. hard to be seated with oneself. So be more with Bhagavan. Again, be more with Bhagavan means how to be more with Bhagavan, going sitting in the temple hall, sitting in puja rooms. No, be with the Shastram. Being with, no, all the time, see that you spare that quality time for Shastram. You have time for Shastram. Which is Jnana Yajna. Once your time is available for Shastra study, then you are with subject matter of the Shastra, means you are with really with Bhagavan. That is, when you are with Bhagavan, you are with yourself. You can't be by yourself, you can't be with yourself without learning to be with Bhagavan. That is why from childhood we are asked to worship and pray. You know why? It is not as a growing up child. You can't just be by yourself. You are physically, emotionally, you are dependent on the parents and you, society. We are all dependent emotionally. Life is interdependent and we are dependent. So we have to grow. That's why the spiritual pursuit is not an overnight business. It is a lifelong project. In fact, not one life's project. The life project of many lives. How do you know that? That is why how many people are here around? How many you informed, sent information? How many people are interested in coming to the Shastra classes? Now, you are all sitting here before me because somewhere you are inclined for the Shastra study. The inclination for studying the Shastram itself, this interest itself you have picked up from your previous lifestyle. Because where you left it, vittakurai, tottakurai, you picked up the thread from your previous lives. You picked it up and you are continuing now. That is why when you think about it, it is not just the life's project, a whole lifelong project this is. Because Shravanam needs time, Mananam needs time, Nididhyasanam implies you are already having gone to Shravanam, Mananam, which implies you are being qualified for Jnanam, which implies you have lived a clean life of Karma Yoga for a length of time. The whole Grihastashrama is designed for that, means what? That is why older you are, okay, doesn't matter whether what I have done before or not, let me be with the Shastram, finished. It's still you can achieve everything. That is why the sannyasi's mind must always associate itself only with the three things in the world, Guru, Shastram, Bhagavan. Like that here also, when you sit for meditation, how your mind must be, your mind also must have associated only with three things, Shastram and Bhagavan, not anything. Which means the mind is completely, nothing else exists for you when you sit for meditation. What is there? Subject matter of the Shastram alone is there. And suppose such a mind, okay, in that mind you sit. That's why antyashramastaha means have entertaining the mind of the sannyasi. Antyashramastaha. Then, of course, when should I get up? When should I do the meditation? 2 o'clock in the afternoon, Sydney, outside the Sydney. You cannot do, isn't it? So definitely, we have certain timings in early mornings and evenings also. Sandhya kalaha, madhyanika sandhya also is mentioned, but still morning and evening, the sunrise and sunset timings are very conducive for meditation. It's not mentioned here. I'm incorporating from other sources. Then, sakala indriyani niruddhya. Sakala indriyani niruddhya. I've already said, withdrawing all your sense organs from their objects of corresponding objects. And niruddhya also, what now? How should your breath be? Next. How should you keep your breath? This also said very clearly, having smooth and relaxed breath. You can't really breathing fast, you know, you can't really fit for meditation. So as a meditator means naturally your breath also must be smooth and soft, I mean slow. So you sit, not too slow, not too fast. And that's why that mind must be, if you have this sattvic mind, then your breath also must be, will be in proper condition. So these are all pre-preparation for meditation. Is it clear? You understand, very important things are said here. Without understanding these preparation for meditation, you simply sit for meditation. It may be useful, but I don't think really it be effective. Therefore, it's continued now. It's not complete. This fifth mantra is not complete. It's incomplete. It is now. We have to move on to the next mantra to see the complete meaning. Niruddhya. Then sakala indriyani niruddhya, withdrawing on sense organs from their corresponding objects. Then bhaktya swagurum pranamya. Why it is very important? Association is very important. When you sit for meditation and then with all great expressing your gratitude, just bowing to your teacher. Swagurum pranamya. Not only one teacher can bow to Krishna, you can bow to Adi Shankara Bhagavatpada, you can bow to Mahatmas. No, like people like Swamiji, bow to Mahadagati, Gurum Pranamya. Just bow to them. With Bhaktya Pranamya. Then you have to, okay, you have done all these things. Now you have, your attention must be focused. Where all, how the attention should be withdrawn has been said. Withdrawn attention should be focused where now? That is going to be said in the following mantra. Krit Pundarikam Virajam Vishuddham. Vichintya Madhye. Vishadam Vishokam. Achintyam Avyaktam Anantarupam. Shivam Prashantam. Amritam Brahmayonim. Okay. So here, again it's not complete. We have to go next verse also. But anyway, we'll see it. Hrit Pundarikam Virajam Madhye. Madhye means Sharira Madhye. Sharira Madhya means in the chest. Chest means where? Chest means again Hrit Pundarikam means your heart. Okay, Pundarikam literally means lotus. And here Hrit Pundarikam means always your physical heart is said to be Hrit Pundarikam, the lotus heart. Why the heart is mentioned here? Because in the heart there is space, and that space is said to be the place of the mind. Because indriyam means the mind is an indriyam, and that is where the mind is actually. The mind is an indriyam located in the golakam called physical heart. I taught you the difference between indriyam and golakam in other classes. Tattvabodha class, Atmabodha class, I taught in other classes. Indriyam means a subtle, imperceptible power. The subtle, imperceptible power is called indriyam. Like how your seeing power is very subtle, the power through which you see the world, objects, but the power itself is what? It cannot be perceived through eyes. Isn't it? Therefore, the subtle power which is available, not available for sense perception, but available for thought perception, the subtle power, and you can't really see the power, you can't objectify the power outside of you. Therefore, that subtle power is what? Indriyam. Like hearing power, seeing power, power of smelling, power of taste, power of touch. All these powers are subtle powers. But each power has its own locus. And that is a physical part. The physical part is perceptible. Isn't it? Like which in the physical part where these subtle powers obtain is called golakam. So we can say this ear is a golakam, hearing power is the indriyam. Eyes are the golakam, seeing power is the indriyam. Nose is the golakam, power of smelling is indriyam. The physical parts, the golakani, the physical parts are perceptible, available for sense perception, but subtle powers obtaining in this golakani are imperceptible. No? It means they are available for your own thought perception. So they are all subtle powers. Similarly, mind also is what? Antakaranam also is indriyam. Understand? Much subtler power is what? Indriyam. And what is the golakam where this mind obtains is hrit pundarikam. That is why when you dissect, if you dissect, body dissection is done, you can't find locate the mind there. Isn't it? You can't find it. But it's very subtle. That's why it's imperceptible, I said. So that's why hrit pundar, when you meditate, hrit pundarikam, that is where mind obtains, and in the mind alone, as the witness of the mind, the reality is available for recognition. Therefore, it takes you now. But here, he immediately suddenly introduces what? Arupa dhyanam. Now, he does not talk about here, ekarupa or anekarupa. He takes it to arupa. But he's also going to mention later on that. We'll talk about, see that. So here, virajam, all these are all words, describing the nature of the reality, which is available as the swarupam of the I, the truth of the I. So in the heart, in the lotus heart, there is mind. That mind, what is available, that's the witness of the mind, what is there is what? At the I. And the swarupam of the very I, the truth of the I, is available as what here? Virajam. You know, the virajam. Virajam means free from all impurities, all sins. Then vishuddham. Vishuddha. Vishuddham again. Free from all impurities, no, pure. No, then, achintyam, the vishadam, vishadaha. Vishadaha again, quiet. Silence is what again, swarupam, isn't it? Quiet. Vishokaha, vishokaha, sorrowless. So, pure, quiet, silent, sorrowless, no, blemish free, pure reality is there. And what is that reality? Again, achintyam. Achintya. Achintya, achintyam is an objective case. The words are all in objective case. When you complete the whole thing, I'll explain to you again. Achintyam, achintyaha. Achintyaha atmahir. Chintyaha means with that which can be conceived, a conceivable. That which can be thought of is called chintya. Achintya means that which is not conceivable, inconceivable. That which is not available even for thought perception. Isn't it? So, mano agocharam. That which is not available for thought. You can't conceive. You cannot see headache. But still you can conceive. We say, I have headache means you don't see my, you see my head, but you can't see my headache. But you all can conceive headache, isn't it? But here, Atma, the reality which obtains in this mind, as the witness of the mind, obtaining in this Hrit Pundarikam, the lotus heart, is not available for thinking, thought. So, achintya, achintyam, then avyaktam. Avyaktam again, unobjectifiable. Not as a thought, and not as a object of thought, not as an object of sense organs also. So, avyakta means, literally it means unmanifest, but here you have to understand it as not imperceptible. Avyaktam here is imperceptible through senses and not perceptible through mind, which means it's not available for conception, isn't it? Conceiving. Mind cannot conceive of the Atma. Very inconceivable, achintyam, avyaktam, avyaktam. Then, anantarupam. Anantarupam, that is of that which is of the nature of limitlessness. Just little words we'll see here. That which is of the nature of limitlessness. So, all, now what are you going to focus your attention on? That is said here. That is why these words must have been unfolded earlier for you to be able to relate, see the meaning of these words. How Atma, Atma Swarupam, how the truth of one's own self is inconceivable. How the truth of one's own self is unobjectifiable. How the truth of one's own self, how it is not an object of perception. How it is pure. How it is free from blemishes. How it is free from sins. How it is free from, how it is of the nature of limitlessness. Anantarupam. Which means that which is available for recognition here, basically, is always everywhere in everything, as everything. You recognize it in the mind, that does not mean it is not outside. What does it mean? It's everywhere. Which means there is no place where it is not. There's no time when it is not. There's no object in which it is not. Which means that alone is there everywhere, always, as all the objects of perception. Therefore, anantarupam, not one, is that which is of the nature of infinitude, limitlessness. Anantarupam, then Shivam. Shivam is one word which explains the meaning of the three words which have been said earlier. Virajam, Vishuddham, Vishokam, Vishadam. All the words, meaning of those words are again revealed by this one word, Shivam. Shivam literally means, we say, auspicious or auspiciousness. You know, we have to understand it is that which is free from sorrow. Shiva means the reality which is implied by this term Shivam, Shivaha, is free from a devoid of sorrow. It's a sorrowless. It is sorrowless means what? It does not cause sorrow also. Which means it not only that, it in fact, in if we know what it is, the sorrow also will resolve. So the reality knowing which sorrow will resolve, the reality which does not cause sorrow, the reality which is free from sorrow, is what? Is Shivaha. You're going to see that now. Wait. I'm killing the first little meanings. Then we'll go. Shivaha. Then Prashantaha. Prashantam. Prashanta again. Prakarshena Shantaha. That which cannot be disturbed at all by anything. Absolutely non-disturbable is the reality, which is your own Swarupam. Every time you say, I am disturbed, you are not disturbed. You are the witness of the disturbed mind. That you are the observer and the seer, the one who witnesses the disturbances in the mind, the disturbed mind. Actually, you are free from disturbances. That's why we say here, prashantaha. Then, amrutaha. Amrutaha again is what? Free from mortality, immortal. Here, immortal means definitely the form is subject to mortality. The physical form is subject to mortality. Amrita, which means, suppose, the wave comes, the wave has beginning, the wave comes to, again goes back, it resolves, it definitely, it has death also. It comes, death means what? Comes and goes. The form does not continue to be there always, because form comes into existence, again the form also collapses. The form comes and form goes. Isn't it? Similarly, here also the physical forms which you are endowed with comes and goes. It will go. It is subject. This is what the coming and going, constantly coming and going is what actually we say mortality. It doesn't remain continuously forever. That is what is death. Death actually is only change, undergoing changes. Assumes of there's a form, again form goes. Form comes, form goes. It's only constantly changing forms, really speaking. This which is called death. So here also physical form comes and goes, no doubt about it. But this is Amrita. What is Amrita here? You. When you say you, the truth of I is free from mortality. It is immortal. That's why Amrita. Amritam. Then you say Brahma Yonihi. Brahma Yonim. All these words are in objective case. The mantra is not complete. I had to do one more verse. See, the 5th, 6th and 7th should be read together. I'm just giving it till me so I can again put them together later on. So Brahma Yoni. Brahma means the limitlessly vast cosmos here is also Brahma. The whole jagat is what? Brahma. Why? It is also vast, isn't it? Limitlessly. And the Yoni means a cause here. The source, the cause, the origin, the existence of the entire universe is Brahma Yonihi. That reality which you are recognizing as the truth of yourself, as Swarupam of yourself, in your mind, as witness of the mind, in the Hrit Pundarikam, which is of the nature of purity, which is free from blemishes, and which is inconceivable, which is not object, unobjectifiable, which is not available for sense perception, and that reality which is immortal, which is not subject to any birth or death, that one is in fact the limitless reality which is always everywhere there as everything, is the cause, the source of this entire universe. Brahma Yoni means Jagat Karanam. Here should take the word Yoni means Karanam. Jagat Karanam means cause of the universe. Is it clear? Brahma Yonim. He says all these words on objective case. He says, may one meditate, focus one's attention on one's own Swarupam, which is the reality of the universe, truth of the universe, which is of this nature. Okay, he says, he's going to continue the next verse. We'll see the next mantra also. Tamadi madhyanta vihinamekam vibhum chidanandam arupamadbhutam. That ends number 6. Yes. Tam means that Paramatmanam, the truth, that Paramatma, the absolute self, the truth of the universe, that Paramatmanam. Adi Madhya Anta Vihinam. That which is devoid of beginning, middle and the end. That reality has no beginning. It's a beginningless reality. It has no middle also, because anything which has a beginning alone can have the middle. மத்தியம், மத்திய விஹீனம், மத்திய ரஹிதம், அந்த விஹீனம், இட் ஹஸ் நோ எண்ட் ஆல்சோ. இட் இஸ் டிவைட் ஆஃப் பிகினிங், மிடில் அண்ட் எண்ட் மீன்ஸ் இட் ஹஸ் நோ பிகினிங் அண்ட் எண்ட். இட் இஸ் இட்டர்னல் ரியாலிட்டி. Isn't it? We say in the middle age. We talk about the middle age. That is, it has no middle age, it has no beginning age, it has no end age also, isn't it? There is no such a thing. It is free from all. So, Adi Madhya Anta Vihinam. Vihinam. Then Ekam. Very important. Ekam. That reality, my God, which is available for your own, your Swarupam. Which is available as you, as you, the I, that is not actually, not many. Because all of us can claim that now, ask the doubt can come. If you say the truth of I means truth of my I and truth of Vasanthi's I, truth of I in anyone, no. That is the only reality of all the I in every mind. That is why Ekam. Ekam. Then Vibhum. Vibhum means what? There's no Lord other than this reality, your Swarupam. There's no Lord other than the truth of yourself, Vibhu. This word Vibhu also means actually the one who shines as everything is called Vibhu. That reality which alone shines as everything in this universe. The whole universe shines because you are there. Because you see it. If you do not see it, the world will not shine. Therefore, we say that which alone shines as everything in this universe is called Vibhu. Vibhu, literally they say Lord. Ishwaraha, Bhagavan. Why do you call it Vibhu, the Lord? Vividham Bhati. That which alone shines as everything. No, yasmat sarvam vibhavati, that from which everything comes into manifestation, that which alone shines as everything is called Vibhu. And what is that? That Lord. Where do you recognize that Lord? Ishvara, the Swarupam, the truth of the whole, where are you going to recognize? In your own mind, in your own, the heart. No, the heart means don't go and think of the heart, in your mind, which is obtaining in your own heart, and as the very truth of I. And what is this here? Chit Ananda Rupam. Chit. Only now he introduces that reality, which is what? Chit means here, consciousness. And then Ananda Rupam. That which is of the nature of fullness. Ananda Rupa means fullness and consciousness are not two different things. Like what? Like fire and heat are not two different things. Sun and light are not two different things. So similarly here, this consciousness and fullness are not two different things. With reference to ocean, H2O and fullness are not two different things. With reference to ocean. Similarly, with reference to the whole Jagat, consciousness and fullness are not two different things. Understand? In fact, consciousness remains filling everything. In fact, everything exists in consciousness. Everything is consciousness. That's why we have to understand Ananda Rupam. Okay? Chit Ananda Rupam. Then Arupam. And all the forms are consciousness, the reality here. But the reality which is consciousness, which is of the nature of fullness, is of the nature of formlessness. It's a formless reality. What form does consciousness have? What form does reality have? Arupam, no form. Okay? It is formless. If it is form, then it would have been what? Chintyam, it would have been vyaktam, it would have been perceptible. That's why it is formless, isn't it? Now, arupam, then adbhutam. Adbhutam means wondrous, wonderful. Wonderful means something inconceivable, unobjectifiable, imperceptible, pure, absolutely pure, that which is of the nature of limitlessness and fullness, which is formless, which is pure consciousness, which is everywhere, always in as everything, and which obtains in one's own mind, obtaining in the lotus heart as the very truth of I, as the witness of everything. And this, isn't it wonderful then? Isn't it a wonder? Isn't it? Adbhutam. In Bhagavad Gita, this word Adbhutam, in Gita it is Aschariyavad Pashyati Kaschidenam Aschariyavad Vadati Tathaiva Chanyaham Aschariyavad Chainam Anyashrunoti Shrutvapyenam Vedana Chaiva Kaschit. Aschariyam means what? Really it is something Adbhutam. There is no greater wonder than yourself. You are the most exciting thing. There is nothing which is more exciting than your own self. But unfortunately, we get excited with so many things in the world. Isn't it? So, Adbhutam. There is nothing more exciting than yourself, really. That's why Adbhutam. Okay, now we have to continue the next. It's not complete yet. Now, that reality alone, now suppose we want to have Ekarupa Dhyanam, we want to see. Now, Ekarupam also he's mentioning now, he's look at this. Umasahayam Parameshwaram Prabhum Trilochanam Nilakantham Prashantam Dhyatva Munirgachati Bhutayonim Samastasakshim Tamasav Parastat. Again, our Lord is Uma Sahayaha. Uma Sahayaha means Uma Sametaha. Sahayaha, one who is supportive of Uma, literal meaning. Uma Sametaha, one who is inseparably with Uma. You know, this Uma is very interesting. In Sri Rudra Prashna, we have Bhashyam, Shingeri Math. There's a word Soma, Nama Soma Yacha comes, no? The word Soma, if you take it, if you split it, Sa plus Umaha, isn't it? Uma Sahitaha is Somaha. That's the meaning. But Soma means Soma Shekhara, we say. Also the crescent moon we talk about, isn't it? Soma Shekhara, Chandra Shekhara, like that. So here Somaha means actually Uma. Uma means what? Uma is actually whole, Jagat is Uma. Sa Umaha, Uma Sahitaha, Umaya Sahitaha, the one who is endowed with, one who is manifest as the Uma, is Uma Sahitaha. Isn't it? Samudra Sahitaha Jalam. Samudra Sahitam Jalam means what? Sahita means what? Inseparable, isn't it? What is the water and the ocean, Namarupa ocean, are inseparable. Now, Maik Sahitaha Prakashaha. Mean what now? Can you separate Maik, the light and the illumined opaque object? Can you ever separate light and the illumined object? You can never separate. The illumined object and the light, I'm not talking about the non-illumined, okay? The illumined object and the light are non-separate, inseparable. Illumined means, it is means it is illumined, it is illumined means it is inseparably with the light. Ocean is means, ocean is inseparably with what? Water. Ocean is means water is. Water is means it is inseparable. Namarupa is with the water only. Similarly, the universe is means what? Whole Jagat is Uma. Universe is means consciousness is. Brahman is. Reality is. You are. Whole Jagat is means reality is. Which means the whole reality alone is manifest as the universe. Therefore, Uma Sahayaha means one who is manifest as the Jagat. In fact, Uma, there in the Rudram, the meaning is given, Uma is Omkaraha put in different order. What is the Om? The sound symbol of the Lord Om consists of three sounds. The one monosyllabic sound word, Om, consists of three sounds. What are they? Akaraha, Ukaraha, Makaraha. A, U, M. These three sounds put in different order is what? U, M, A. Om put in different order is Uma. Om stands for the whole Jagat. Understand? So, Uma, Uma. We name girls as Uma. Okay. So, Uma Parvati. So, this Uma, that is why Vagrathava Samprukta Vagrata Pratipattaye. Isn't it? Vagrathava Samprukta. Like the word and its meaning, Parvati and Parameshwara are inseparable. And we have understanding of Vardhana Arishwara. Power and the powerful are inseparable. There is no such a thing called the power is if the powerful is. Isn't it? The power without the powerful cannot exist by itself. The powerful cannot have the status of being the powerful without the power. They are inseparable, like the word and its meaning. Vag arthav iva sampruktav. Isn't it? The umasahayaha here means, umasahaya means the one who is inseparably with Uma, the power. Consciousness and its power, chit shaktihi. Shaktihi is power, chit is consciousness. Power of consciousness and the power consciousness are inseparable. Isn't it? So, Uma Sahayaha means one who is, you know, manifest as the cosmos, one who is in the form of the universe, inseparably. Then, Parameshwaraha, Paramaha, absolute. Absolute self, absolute reality, and there is no Lord other than this reality. Therefore, we say Parameshwaraha, the absolute Lord. Prabhuhu, like Vibhuhu, we have Prabhuhu. Prabhuhu means Prakarshena Bhati, Prabhavati Asmat Sarvam, that from which, from whom everything comes into manifestation, that in which everything remains. Sustained, that in which, into which everything resolves is called Prabhu. That's why Lord. See, Vibhu, Prabhu, all these words, they mean, literally they mean Lord, Lord, Lord. If you analyze the meaning of the words, Prabhavati Asmat, that from which everything comes into manifestation, that in which everything remains sustained, that in which everything resolves is Prabhu. So, Prabhu, then Trilochanam. Trilochanaha. Lochanam means I. And three means number three. One who is of three eyes. Three-eyed Lord. Again, Bhagavan is said to be three-eyed. And three-eyed means, again, we should not simply think, isn't it? Three eyes. If you see the whole Jagat is Parameshwara. The whole cosmos is the manifestation of only reality, Parambrahma. The whole Jagat is Ishvara, which means, and this Jagat shines because the sources of light. And what are the sources of light? There's no fourth source of light. You bring in everything under these things. No, the fire, sun and moon. You see these three sources of light as three eyes of the Lord. Trilochanaha. Is it? Trilochanaha, the one who is manifest as the three sources of light which in which all these opaque things shine for you. So, Trilochanaha. Then, Neelakantaha. Neelakanta. Neelakanta, one who is, you know, one who has blue-necked Lord, one who is Neelakantaha. We have Purana story. I cannot go into the story. You all know the story yourself. How the Lord got his blue neck and all that. The one who has these clouds above, one who is manifest as, one who is among the clouds which form the sky, isn't it? So, Neela Kantaha, the blue neck. We can also, in Puranas, we can also think of, For Ekarupa Dhyanam, we can take as Neelakanta, one who has this, the blue neck. So Neelakantaha, then Prashantaha. We'll see again everything. I want to complete once, then again we'll come back from the beginning. Prashantaha, already the word has come. Prashantaha already has come, second word has come here. Again, the one who is of the nature of peace, absolute peace. You shouldn't say peaceful. Reality is not peaceful. Reality is of the nature of peace, absolute peace. The peace and reality are not two different things, which means disturbance-free. Being disturbance-free is the very nature of the reality. You are prashantaha, prashantam. Now you can, all these words, I told you, it's all an objective case. Because now the verb comes, dhyatva. No, dhyatva means having meditated on, having focused one's attention on, having dwelt upon the Lord whose swarupam is this. And where do you see the swarupam, the nature of the Lord, the whole? Where do you see this? Recognize that the swarupam, the nature of the reality, the truth of the whole as the truth of the I in your own mind, in lotus heart. Is it clear? You don't see this. You cannot find the meaning of these words, and for the being the mean, revealing the nature of the reality elsewhere. That is why recognition of the truth of I is in fact understanding the nature of the reality of the whole. I'm repeating it. Recognition of the truth of one's own self, the I, is the understanding of the nature of the reality of the whole. You recognize the truth of I in your own mind, then you have understood the swarupam of the reality of the whole. Once you, how? Through shravanam, mananam, nididhyasanam, if you have understood, then you can meditate upon this swarupam. When you meditate upon the truth of yourself, which you understood through shravanam and mananam, then you are dwelling upon the truth of the reality, the truth of the whole cosmos, reality of the entire universe. If you meditate upon dhyatva, having meditated on this truth, one who meditates is called what here? Munihi. One who is constantly contemplative is Munihi. Again, the word Munihi, we have our own funny meanings. All as a child, Muni means immediately we put one round face and put on the one top on one shindu. You know, we call him Muni. But actually, Munihi means doesn't matter, it can be in modern jeans and t-shirt, but still if you are meditative, you are Munihi. If you have the contemplative disposition of the mind, you are Munihi. Okay? So here, the Munihi, dhyat bhutayonim, bhutayoni again, the cause of, the origin of all the beings, the source of all the beings. And samastha sakshi means the only witness of all the minds and the entire cosmos. Of all the three states of experience, samastha sakshi, the witness or the only witness of the entire cosmos, the only witness of all the minds, the only witness of jagradavastha, swapnavastha, the waking state, dream state, and deep sleep state. That's why the only witness of all entirety, samastha sakshi. Then tamasaha parastat means what? One who is the witness of even the ignorance. one who is free from ignorance, one who is the witness of the ignorance, and one who is, as I told you already, Maya also you can say, Tamasah Parastat means, the one who is superior to the Shakti, the power which is manifest as everything. Tamasah Parastat means even Maya, one who is the very existence of the very Maya Shakti. One who lends existence to the constantly changing power which is manifest as the universe is called Tamasaha Parastat, isn't it? One witness of the ignorance also, you can say one more meaning. That reality, no, Dhyatva. Now, what should the Munihi meditate on? All these words describe what does this Muni meditate on. So having meditated on this reality, what is the benefit of this meditation? It is said here, Munihi gacchati bhutayonim samastasakshim. Munihi gacchati. This meditator reaches. The meditator goes to. Reaches what? Meditator attains the source of all the beings, the witness of everything. Munihi gacchati bhutayonim samasta sakshim munihi tamasaha parastat gacchati. Which means the meditator reaches Bhagavan, attains Bhagavan. Again, attaining Bhagavan, I told you many times earlier, he resolves his identity with Paramatma. He recognizes his Swarupam being Paramatma. Before this meditation, this meditation will result in ascertained, unforgettable vision of Paramatma being one's own self, or oneself being non-separate from Paramatma. Thereby he understands, before he was thinking, he must have been thinking, I am a human being, endowed with having consciousness. Now I am a spiritual being endowed with temporarily, no, coming and going physical body. So this is, he attains Brahman means, he resolves his, cognitively, he resolves his identity with Paramatma, the whole. In his understanding, there is only Brahma, only reality, which alone is Satyam, everything else is Mithya, and then for him, the meaning of I is no more, just this one body, mind, sense complex. For him, meaning of I is the limitless reality, consciousness. Therefore, the nature of consciousness is his nature, which means his Swarupam, for him, fullness is his Swarupam. For limitlessness is his Swarupam. Immortality is his Swarupam. Therefore, his nature. Therefore, he is free from all forms of fear and problems caused by this ignorance. That we have to add. Okay? So, this meditator meditates upon what? Here ends all these three. We have to start from 5th, 6th and 7th. The verb comes, you know, Munihi gacchati. Now you said the meaning. Munihi gacchati means this meditator, not simply the meditator who is endowed with this meditative disposition of the mind, who meditates, attains Paramatma. Attains Paramatma means he attains Paramatma in terms of knowledge. You can never attain Paramatma, Bhuta Udalodu Ondrinar, Kadeve Kadeyat. Okay, Shastra, no, never can you lift your... Some people think, I can go with along with my physical body and become one with Bhagavan. Go and sit in his house. No, physically, there are so many people who have a very strong idea that the Bhuta Udalodu, they want to go with the physical body. They don't want to leave it here and go. Okay, and then I tell you, even if please understand, a physical body will definitely get disintegrated. like how our abhijin or okra definitely get disintegrated, so also this also will get disintegrated. It is as good as our abhijin, kathrikai, isn't it? It is. It would not. It's not different at all. So physical body one day will get disintegrated. Go back to the elements. Then what happens here? Prana, sukshma will resolve for good. Then what else is here? Sukshma is resolved for good. Then body becomes disintegrated. What else is here? There the eye sense is resolved. Cognitively in what? In consciousness, isn't it? And what is consciousness here? The consciousness is the reality, which is only eternal reality. Adi anta madhya vi, adi madhyanta vihinam. Free from everything. It is there. That alone is satyam. And here for him, the content of I, before this jnanam, before ascertainment, for him, I means all body, mind, and complex, and the limit as an individual. Now for him, in his understanding, meaning of I is not just the body, mind, and complex, but meaning of the I is pure consciousness. Content of I is consciousness. The truth of I is consciousness. The reality of I is consciousness. And what is consciousness? Which is the only secondless non-dual reality of the whole cosmos. Truth of everything, the source of everything, origin of everything, all the beings, bhuta yonihi, which is the only witness of the entirety. Samastha sakshim bhuta yoni munihi gachati. How does he resolve his identity with Paramatma? How does he become one with Paramatma? He attains Paramatma through knowledge, in terms of knowledge. Even I told the meaning of this word Govindaha long, long ago when I said once. I don't know whether you remember that. In Bhaja Govindam it comes. Govindam Bhaja means may you attain the Lord who is to be attained through knowledge. Go means jnanam. Bindate means attains. One who has to be attained through knowledge. There is no way of going near Bhagavan other than knowing what the truth is, Bhagavan is. And you can know the truth of the Bhagavan only as the truth of yourself. No? In your own mind. As the very truth of I. And okay, that is why it is said Hrit Pundarikam. And what is, how, when you know the truth of the whole, as the truth of yourself, how are you knowing, how do you know that, how do you see the truth? You know, is all swarupa anusandhanam. Swarupa anusandhanam. Constantly, continuously focusing one's attention on one's own swarupam, which one has understood through shravanam and mananam. What is that? And we have to redo all the words. Okay, we'll redo it next class. So tomorrow we'll unfold. Today only, because this Upanishad is, now what happens? All the three verses we have to put together to see the whole meaning. I have only given you the literal meaning of each word today. Okay, next class, we are going to see how, what it means by saying seeing the reality as one's own swarupam, and that swarupam, which is the one's own swarupam being, is of this nature. How are you going to see that? So arupaha, arupam, arupaha, anandaha, vishadaha, vishokaha, every word will see the meaning of this. We have to arrive at consciousness. Then we have to see how consciousness is ananda swarupaha, how consciousness is of the nature of fullness. First of all, what is consciousness? We have to arrive at. Then you have to see how consciousness is the very truth of I, and that consciousness, which is the truth of I, is of the nature of fullness, is of the nature of limitlessness, is free, is from sorrow, is blemish free. That we have to see. So the munihi bhutayonim, samastha sakshim bhutayonim gachati means attains Bhagavan in terms of knowledge. where he completely resolves his individuality in Bhagavan, the totality, and in whose vision all that is here is only Brahma, all that is here is only Bhagavan. Okay, and we'll see that. We'll see tomorrow. In the next class, we are going to redo these verses. We'll see that. Okay. Redo means we have to see the meaning of these verses again. Only today I said the literal meaning. Okay. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Tat Sat Sri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.